Hi everyone, and welcome to Four Panel, your weekly slice of comics and manga goodness. I'm Andrew, and for once I'm not joined by Rob. Unfortunately, just before we recorded, he turned out to be a Skrull.
But,
and as the mysterious stranger has revealed, a figure fell from the sky, landing in the earth, and I recognise a renegade soldier when I see one. It's Mick!
That's right, the unresolved plotline from season one of Four Panel.
A.K.A. our regular co-host, who then became the regular running joke of having disappeared, which then stopped being a regular joke because I realised I just have to make up jokes to do them regularly, and that was too much effort.
So to save that effort, I'm back with a subtle refinement of my backstory. So welcome to issue one of all new, all different, Mick.
It will be cancelled after two issues.
Oh.
It's okay. You're getting folded into the team book anyway.
Oh, that's all right then. Which will get cancelled after three issues.
No, if season one has taught us anything, Mick, it's that nothing can stop us, no matter how many people want us to.
Despite the number of requests to the contrary.
So, we should probably get into doing things.
Yeah.
And the main news this week is that the Captain Marvel trailer's come out.
It has. And I've been so busy I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Oh, no.
But
let me bring up the Google document in Scratch. Ask Mick what he thinks about the trailer off the list.
Just bear with me a second. Right, I've watched that.
Okay, excellent. And I liked that bit because it means I didn't have to do anything. So yeah, this is the origin story for Carol Danvers, a character who really hasn't been in any of the Marvel films yet. Like, I feel like I'm so used to everyone in the Marvel universe already being an established presence. It's weird to just have this completely new character.
Yeah, but they are kind of retrofitting her, aren't they? Because it's set in the 90s.
Yes, indeed it is, as the trailer not so subtly shows you by having a crash into a Blockbuster.
Although, ironically, Blockbuster's coming back.
Is it?
Yes.
Wait, forget Captain Marvel. This is far more... What? Blockbuster, the company that is like synonymous with idea that the world moved past.
Okay, well, This is comic book related. Blockbuster Videos returned to London, but only stocks Deadpool 2. They've specifically opened a Blockbuster Video store just to sell copies of Deadpool 2.
Oh.
In one of those PR stunts that only the producers of the Deadpool movies could do.
You know how the first Deadpool movie didn't really have enough of a budget?
Yeah.
If anything, Deadpool 2 has too much of a budget now. That's madness. Just someone needs to find this corporate executive and just wrestle them away.
I brought news back from season one.
You did.
I'm just a never
ending. It's appropriate on the Captain Marvel episode.
I'm just
this is our throwback.
I'm just a never ending source of unresolved plot lines. I'm like Lost.
But with more otters.
Indeed, never ditch your otter.
So anyway, should we talk about Captain Marvel?
Yes. Who is Captain Marvel, anyway?
That's a question we'll get to. I figure first we can sort of go through the trailer, by which I mean I guess I'll explain the trailer to you.
Yeah, because it's a really difficult thing to do in an audio format is go through a video trailer.
It's fine, we'll work it out.
We could do it through the medium of interpretive dance.
But after that, that's what we sent Rob off to do.
Yeah, but we couldn't afford the medical bills.
No, we couldn't. It's fine, he'll be back next week, maybe.
Maybe.
So, Captain Marvel, looks like the plot is something along the lines of Carol Danvers is a pilot in maybe the 80s, that there were some flashbacks in the trailer that looked very Top Gun. So, she's a pilot, she finds some kind of mysterious alien device, gets hit with alien juju rays.
Is that a technical term?
Yes, that is the scientific term for them.
Okay.
Which, well, like the comics, turn her into a half-human, half-Kree hybrid. The Kree, of course, being an alien race first seen in Guardians of the Galaxy.
And, of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, of course. Maybe, did they?
Yes.
I remember next to nothing about that show.
You say that like it's like ancient history, like the Inhumans, but it is still running. There is
a new season
coming soon, and it does tangentially attach itself to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay, I was going to say, don't be silly, Mick, Inhumans never happened, but then also, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is still going.
Season 6 on its way.
That sure is something. Something like Carol's magic space powers.
Never count out Coulson. That's what my advice to you, my friend.
Well, he's back as well. He is in this movie. Rocking some 90s, possibly a mullet type hair.
Oh, you see, now, I just want to see that just on that basis. Forget the plot. I just want to see Coulson with a mullet.
I mean, basically, the rest of this episode is kind of perfunctory now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Captain Marvel, Coulson has a mullet now. Job done. Yeah, so Carol, she gets these powers. Seems like maybe what happens is she's then captured by the Kree, has her memories wiped, because a big part of this trailer is her not remembering her past and trying to find that out. So it seems like maybe they brainwash her, turn her into a soldier, and then eventually something happens that means she flees back to Earth.
Right.
At which point, shenanigans occur.
What? Action-packed comic book shenanigans?
Indeed.
Wow, they're
of
the best
Nick
kind.
Fury with two eyes variety.
Wow.
That is the weirdest trend in Marvel films now. Is they're super obsessed with that de-aging technology.
Well, it's just so much more reliable than that de-facial hairing technology that DC favour.
They should have just slapped a Band-Aid over Superman's mouth.
Yeah, but then you'd have had the fanboys going, why does he need a Band-Aid? He's not going to cut himself shaving, is he?
Because it's Kryptonian.
Yes. I'll have a pack of 5 Gillette Krypton-coated blades, please. Kryptonite-coated blades.
How come Superman doesn't just do that? How come he doesn't just make, like, a blade with a teeny tiny bit of kryptonite on it and use that to shave? Surely that's got to be easy than, like, bouncing laser beams off mirrors.
You'd think.
And that's our summary of the Captain Marvel trailer.
Yes. Note how we tangentially brought in many other topics there. You don't get that on other lower standard podcasts.
To be honest, I think it might be because I don't really know how I feel about this trailer.
It doesn't give a great deal away, does it?
No, which I suppose I don't mind, because I really don't like it when they spoil the whole plot.
I hate trailers that go on for ages and give you pretty much all the best bits of the movie, but...
Yeah, but...
I mean, it doesn't give you enough to say, ooh, I really want to go see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key problem is that there's not really any kind of money shot, is there?
No, there's not a, ooh, I want to see how they get to there.
Yeah, I think the closest we get is Carol kind of in her costume... doing some sort of power-up thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess there's a sort of curiosity factor in, hold on, is that Nick Fury with two eyes? But as that's been quite extensively lauded as part of the film anyway, it's not really going to boost sales, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, there is that one bit where she just punches an old woman in the face.
True.
Which, I mean, I assume it's probably because that old woman is a Skrull. But up until I see that film... you will not convince me it's not because she offered Carol a Werther's original.
Or maybe in a subtle twist, she offers Carol a Werther's original, and it's the Werther's original that turns out to be a Skrull.
It's just a tiny Werther's original size Skrull.
Yeah, a Skrullet. A Skrullling.
I'd probably just eat it anyway.
Yeah, but obviously Carol deals with things in her own way.
That way being punching pensioners.
Which, you know, to be fair, if you've ever been shopping in... town centres on market day, you get to understand how she feels. I mean, I'm not condoning the activity, but just sometimes, you know?
Yeah, just sometimes it's justified to smack a granny.
I'm definitely not going to condone that kind of behaviour, because it might turn out to be super gran.
Also, actually, no, it's a really bad thing. Never do that. Jesus, listeners, why do you keep coming here for your moral advice?
Yeah, don't try anything we say at home. Mainly because a lot of what we say comes from comic books and is therefore impossible.
Hey, speaking of comic books and impossible and probably quite convoluted as well, just who the flipping heck is Captain Marvel?
Well, that's a very good question, which I was hoping that you would be able to answer. I could answer it myself by going and getting my copy of The Vault. However, it's very, very heavy and I'm very fat and lazy.
Well, I can't argue with that kind of logic. So, Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Carol Danvers, she first debuted in Marvel Comics in Marvel Superheroes issue 13, March 1968.
Oh, the year out. She's as old as me.
Maybe she's Super Gran.
Maybe I'm Captain Marvel.
Both of those are terrifying prospects.
For both of us.
So, Carol Danvers, she originally started off not that spectacularly. She was just a very generic sort of love interest for the original Captain Marvel, the very imaginatively named Captain Mar-Vell.
Oh, yeah, I see what they've done.
And that is
there.
The character played by Jude Law in the film, who they seem to be kind of doing a similar sort of thing with their relationship, where he's like her superior in the Kree army, but in the comics, he was a Kree sort of a spy, basically sent to Earth to kind of probe it out to see how suitable it is for invasion. But he decided, actually, no, I quite like this planet, and so became its defender instead.
Oh, that was nice of him.
It was, you know, until he died.
Because, you know, as we mentioned earlier in the show, I've come across the Kree in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they're not very nice at all.
Well, no, they must not be. Imagine how bad they are that Captain Mar-Vell took one look at humanity and said, nah, actually, this is the better option.
Yeah. No, they are quite nasty. You know that nasty for nasty's sake?
Yeah, the very...
I won't be at all surprised if they didn't turn out to be the villains.
What?
I'll be honest.
What? The honestly, alien civilization whose entire society is based on war and conquering other planets might not be the heroes.
Yeah, I reckon that might be the case. I reckon they might be the bad guys.
Bloody lunacy you're talking, Mick.
Well, as you know, before Infinity War, I had my suspicions about that Thanos bloke, and my instincts are rarely wrong.
I'll admit you were half right about that one.
Yeah, you see, yeah.
But no, so saying that the Kree are going to be the villains is almost as ludicrous a suggestion as how Carol Danvers became a superhero.
And how did she become a superhero?
In one adventure with Captain Marvel, the man Captain Marvel, they were fighting one of his enemies, whose name is Yon Rogg, which sounds...
Are you sure you didn't misread that? Are you sure they weren't saying, hey, let's defeat Yon Rogg?
Maybe, because his name does sound like it's supposed to be something. Like in DC Comics, how all of Starfire's race are named after vegetables. I'm not joking. Starfire's real name is Coriander.
Oh yes, it is, yeah, but with a weird spelling, isn't it?
Spell it with a K and then it's apostrophe R.
Yeah.
So they were...
Oh, do you remember the good old days when alien names became alien names because they had apostrophes in?
To be fair, Ms. Marvel's origin does have some pretty great alien names, because you've got Yon Rogg, and he was using a device called the Psych Magnetron.
Well, that sounds like a fairly intimidating device of shenaniganery, which is a new word.
The specific shenaniganery was that it, and I quote, caused Danvers' genetic structure to meld with Captain Marvel's, which, you know, usually only takes a couple of bottles of red. The end result.
So just so that I know I've got this straight in my head, right? So Captain Marvel was born when Captain Marvel took Captain Marvel under his wing, and then a villain with a psych magnetron melded Captain Marvel with Captain Marvel.
Is Captain Marvel, he's half Captain Marvel and half Captain Marvel. But see, Captain Marvel, she's now half Captain Marvel and half Captain Marvel.
You see, now, if you'd just said that at the beginning, it would have made so much more sense.
You're right, I'm sorry, I've overcomplicated this beyond belief. But yeah, basically, the upshot of this is Carol Danvers got some of Mar-Vell's powers, so now she could fly and she was super strong, and I don't think originally she could do energy blasts. I think she got that later.
As an add-on?
Yeah, she, you know, upgraded the data plan.
Captain Marvel 2.0.
I tell you, the download for the update was an absolute pain in the buttocks.
Well, I guess if it was in the 90s, it would have been on dial-up, right?
Well, even worse, it was in the 80s. So she had to wait a decade for dial-up to be invented. So yeah, all of this was a very long-winded way of basically Marvel saying, hey, we want a female superhero. So they gave Carol powers and made her Ms. Marvel.
Hold on. There is a Ms. Marvel.
Yes, see, this is Captain Marvel before she was Captain Marvel. Got her.
So does this mean at some point in the future, Kamala Khan may get promoted?
Quite possibly. Once Carol becomes, like, General Marvel, which I guess means she takes over the sales division.
Yeah. She may become President Marvel.
Maybe, although I feel like her career is going to be undermined when they dredge up pictures of just the absolute mess that was her first costume.
Oh, was it a costume scandal?
Oh, the costumes. So, Ms. Marvel's first costume was... basically, imagine Captain Marvel's costume. The original Captain Marvel. And it's...
that's the original Captain Marvel who melded with the new Captain Marvel to become Captain Marvel.
That's right, yes.
Right, okay.
So it's kind of like his shirt, but cut off at the middle, so her belly's showing.
Well, how else would you empower a female superhero?
By giving her a scarf, that's how.
A scarf and an exposed navel.
A scarf, an exposed navel, and then just a pair of underpants. So yeah, and you know, Mick, all that would suddenly be especially bad if, say, the point of Ms. Marvel was that Marvel billed her as the world's first feminist superhero.
Well, you see, now, interestingly, I had a discussion the other day with a young lady who says she's the world's worst feminist, right? Because she equates feminists with people who just work on the basis that men are crap, right? But actually, she is the perfect feminist because she's got to where she is on her own merits in a predominantly male world. So she is a feminist. But what kind of feminist would Marvel be aiming at in 1968? Because the comics industry was still predominantly male. So it would have been their version of a feminist, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I feel like this is a very, oh, wait a sec, we have no idea what girls want. It's like one of my favourite things about old comics, which is just that clearly no one has any idea how people wear clothes.
Well, to be fair, in a lot of old comics, they just assumed that women didn't, largely. Or if they did, they were very tight-fitting.
Yes, everyone remembers that popular female fashion of cut-up bin bag.
And of course, the other thing is that everyone in... every female in 60s comics had augmentation surgery. Either that or there was something in the water.
It's fine, aliens did it.
Blame the Kree. I told you they were villains.
Yeah, curse you, Kree. Giving people unnaturally attractive bodies. Mm-hmm. So, but it's okay, because after this slightly awkward start, which I think is still like a pretty well-received series, Ms. Marvel went on to even better and further adventures. And by that, I mean years and years of horrible, horrible things happening to her.
Okay. So where would you say, in current sort of continuity, Captain Marvel is? And where does the current Miss Marvel tie in with Captain Marvel, if at all?
See, I think it's actually quite interesting, because basically a lot of Ms. Marvel's history seems like it's kind of been pushed to the side. And a big change that happened was in about 2012, where there was, well, basically when Marvel decided that Carol was going to go from Ms. Marvel to just being Captain Marvel.
Oh, so that's quite a recent change then.
Yeah, it's actually fairly recent. Basically, it was a series written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who basically like redefined all of Carol's stuff. And I feel like, especially the comics and this movie, they seem to be more heavily based on that than anything else. Which, fair play to them, because that was basically all about making Carol kind of the biggest named female hero in the Marvel Universe. I think kind of before that, she was just sort of one of the sort of C or B list Avengers. Right.
Okay. So given this is kind of this film and the forthcoming as yet unnamed Avengers Part 4 is going to be the transition into Phase 4. Is it possible that we might get to see a little bit more from our female Marvel superheroes? Because, let's be honest, she's been in quite a lot of the movies, but we haven't really seen much from Black Widow.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of them, because there's Black Widow, who always seems to be almost an afterthought. And then Scarlet, I mean, what's Scarlet Witch even really done?
Well, she waves her arms around a lot in a very effective manner in a lot of places, and then moons after Vision a bit. But you're right, they are in there as afterthoughts. In fact, some of the female henchmen of the villains get more screen time than the Marvel heroines.
Yeah, which is great, because, like, I couldn't tell you what Scarlet Witch's character is. And actually, I think the Wasp needs probably more to do as well.
Yeah, because, again, she was like a sort of bit part actor in Ant-Man 2, really, which is kind of understandable, but... Again, you know, with this whole, it's not like once we knew there was a Black Panther movie coming out, Black Panther's other appearances weren't as second fiddle.
Yeah, I think we mentioned it on Eclectica when we did our Ant-Man 2 review, is that the Wasp, she's never really had anything that wasn't defined by Ant-Man.
And, you know, she is basically a sidekick in a heist movie in that. It's basically a spandex-clad Ocean's 11.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been the problem so far, is that all these movies, it's always been a male lead character. And I think that carries over into the Avengers, where it's like, oh yeah, you've got Captain America and Iron Man and Thor and the Hulk, and they're kind of, they've all had their own movies. And then also Black Widow and Scarlet Witch are there. And also Hawkeye, he's shooting some arrows at stuff. It's doing a thing where he shoots an arrow and then Loki catches it, but then it explodes.
Yeah. So maybe this is the watershed. Maybe this is where we start to see the fairer half of the Marvel Universe step up. There's only really Guardians where Gamora and Nova have had more to do.
Yeah, but even then, kind of, like the central storylines have been about Star-Lord. True. And especially in Infinity War. It's Gamora. Gamora did not come out of that film well.
But this is it. Is it the transition between the standard superhero and the cosmic side of Marvel, or is it the transition from male-dominated to a more equal footing?
Yeah, I'd like to think so, because I feel like they've said in the past that Captain Marvel is going to be kind of the central point of this movie, of Phase 4, I mean. I mean, of course, she's going to be the central point of the Captain Marvel movie.
Well, you say that. You say that, but neither Batman nor Superman were the central points of Batman versus Superman.
That's right. It was the audience and their disappointment that was the central point. But yeah, but basically I think Captain Marvel is going to be to Phase 4 what Captain America and Iron Man have been to Phases 1 and 2.
Cool. Well, I for one hope that that this does see a redressing of that balance between... the male and the female superheroes, because that will mean that we'll finally get a She-Hulk movie.
Possibly. Because also I think there's some awkwardness with the rights to She-Hulk.
Oh, already with the awkwardness.
They'll blame Universal Pictures.
Surely they can't own She-Hulk.
Yeah, because I think they're the ones who own the Hulk, and so by extension have a claim on She-Hulk.
No.
Kind of like... I think it's kind of like all the faff they had to do between Marvel and Fox over who could use Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, which is kind of a moot point now.
Indeed. Ah, well, we can hope.
Yeah, we can indeed. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. Maybe one day.
You know, when Disney owns the Earth.
Well, I'm not too bothered about them owning all of the Earth, just Earth 616. If they can own all of that, that'll be fine.
I think you'll find technically now it's Earth Prime.
Oh, jeez. Where's my copy of the vault? Do you want to take a break while I go dig it out?
Yeah, you go. You go read your vault.
Hello, fellow vault hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
If you've enjoyed the show, then you can find all of our other shows on Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, or on our website, where we have a range of other shows that might suit your taste. Try them out. You never know. We also have our shop, we have our Patreon, and we have all sorts of other things for you to enjoy on our site, thegeekshow.co.uk. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or on our own Twitter, which is Andrew.
At Four Power Podcast.
Or you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk.
There really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Hi, welcome back to Four Panel, and the moment that you wait for every week with bated breath, comics what we've been reading. We need to...
With our eyes.
Catch your name for that bit. Maybe for season three.
Yes. Oh, whoa. You don't want to rush this. I'm thinking maybe season six for now.
Well, you know, it's a little known fact that actually the storyline for season three has been at the back of my mind since season one. And when you consider that I didn't actually join until the back end of season one, that's quite impressive.
That is very impressive. I'd look forward to you tying in like 150 episodes worth of continuity.
Hey, I've watched classic Doctor Who. I'm all over continuity. Right.
Doctor Who doesn't have continuity.
Oh, yes, it does. A bit. Anyway.
Sometimes, when they remember.
Talking of continuity, my first pick this week is a crossover called Fire and Stone, which is an Aliens versus Prometheus versus Predator versus Alien versus Predator, or as I like to call it, AVPVPAVP. Yeah.
Very catchy. I mean, that's what we should call the segment.
Which is it's a collection from Dark Horse Comics, which tells about five stories, really, spread across those various Ridley Scott-inspired universes. Do you want the short review or the long review?
I don't actually know, because behind the scenes action, we've had a lot of technical difficulties with this episode, and I've got no idea how it's going to be.
The medium length version.
Yes, well cooked, but okay. Still bloody in the middle.
It's okay as a comic. It's not gonna set the world alight. There's nothing particularly startling about the artwork. It's okay. There's nothing particularly brilliant about the script. There's a slightly interesting subplot that runs through three or four of the chapters, but ultimately, just go watch Aliens or Prometheus or Predator, because the same plots are covered in here. It basically covers that Alien franchise plotline of humans arrive somewhere. They spot black alien goo. They sniff, taste, inject, or come into contact with it in some way. One of them mutates into something horrible and they get chased by monsters. Rinse, repeat, rewind. The nice, interesting bit is that they are all loosely linked by being related to each other, mission-wise. The first story is a nice little link. It's someone who goes on a salvage mission to look for the Peter Weyland expedition from the Prometheus movie and end up...
Why? That was a group of the worst people. Why would you ever want to find them?
And this is the thing. I think they've missed a franchise off this crossover, because it should have been crossed over with The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because all the scientists that appear in the Alien universe should have been on that Golga Frinsham B arc of people that society wanted rid of. All the scientists in Aliens are supposed to be on there with the telephone sanitizers and the hairdressers, because they've never heard of masks, protective gloves. There's only one team of scientists that are worse than the scientists that appear in the Alien franchise, and that's the team of scientists that were on board the spaceship in Life, the movie.
Oh, the one that's basically Venom, but not Venom.
Or Alien, but not Alien. Or something like that, but not quite like that. Yeah. So there's nothing new in there. There's the usual plot line about, you know, one of the artificial life forms that they use as part of the crew goes mental.
And that's another thing. Why do you keep using these robots?
They've expanded. They haven't quite got the just the AI version on this ship. You know, there are a few. There's one called Eldon, who's a bit like Bishop from Aliens.
Okay, to be fair, he was like the one good robot.
But also, he's equally, you could say, he's a bit like Ian Holm from Alien. I'm bearing in mind that this is the film set just after Prometheus and before Alien. He's more likely to be Ian Holm than he is Lance Henriksen.
That's disappointing.
So if anything, he's going to be less advanced than the Ian Holm one that went in the first Alien movie.
But slightly more advanced than the Michael Fassbender one.
Yeah.
So I guess he's not going to copy himself and then try and kiss himself.
No, he does spend an awful lot of time asking another crew member if he's his friend. But yeah, that's the most interesting subplot, as it turns out. For all the messing about the plot of one of them going mad, it is actually the most enjoyable plot strand in this collection. And it's the one that runs across three or four of the stories in it. It's one of the few times, and I think I can count them on one hand easily, since I've been doing this podcast, where reading a free comic has felt like a chore.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely not good.
I mean, you know, there are times when I've bought comics and I've felt like it's a chore because it wasn't as good and I've paid good money for it. But for a free one to feel like that is not great.
That's where it still feels like you've spent too much.
Yeah, it's one of those where I guess if you're an aficionado of that universe and a completist, it's probably a worthwhile addition to your collection. I mean, I never got into the whole Alien versus Predator thing anyway, when Dark Horse started doing the comics back in the 90s.
Probably because they were actually very bad.
I never even tried them because I thought, why?
see, I loved those comics as a kid. They were actually like some of the first comics I ever read.
Yeah?
Like, as a 12-year-old.
Right.
Seeing a man get his heart punched out by a predator is the best thing.
But the thing is, obviously, I remember first runs of Alien and Predator, and at no point during either of those franchises did I think, do you know what would work well here? If it turned out that they hunted them for sport, that'd be a really good film. And as it turned out, years later, no, it isn't.
Still, I think it is possibly the film with the most appropriate tagline I've ever seen. Whoever wins, we lose.
Yeah, and that was actually correct. I am so glad I didn't watch AVP2.
Oh, it was a very dark film, is what I remember.
What, you mean as in badly lit, or just...
Yeah, as in I might actually have just been sat in
a closed cinema.
Maybe the projector was just broken and they were just like playing the sound.
Or it was directed by David Fincher.
It's directed by David Fincher, kind of in a locked cupboard.
So yeah, that was AVPVPVAPVBVB.
Versus Robocop, the Terminator, Captain Kirk and Darth Vader.
I'm surprised they didn't actually throw in an AVP versus Batman or something in there. versus Judge Dredd.
I mean,
versus...
To be fair, there is Batman versus Predator and Superman versus Aliens.
I mean, I think looking at some of the... Also by Paul Tobin is the writer of some of this. There's Plants versus Zombies. I mean, you know, pick a sort of genre and stick to it.
That being said, I did read one of the Plants vs. Zombies free comic book things a few years ago and it was quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. I haven't even played the game and it wouldn't cost me anything to play the game, so. But yeah, AVP, it's an impressive looking tome. And if you like collecting logos, the front cover alone is worth the price of admission. But story-wise... Been there, done that, seen it all before, because I've watched the films in the franchise.
I mean, that's basically the problem I've had with like 90% of any comics starring the aliens or the predator that I've read. Yeah, AVP, what a load of A and P.
Indeed. So that's my sci-fi entry for this week.
Yep. Now it's my turn for Science Fiction Corner.
Okay.
Because I have been reading Star Wars Dr. Aphra.
Whoa, 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 whoa. That's not sci-fi. That's a fantasy story set in space. It's basically Hansel and Gretel in space.
You're right. I was just trying to shamelessly cash in on sci-fi corner.
Which is what Star Wars has been doing for 40-odd years.
But no.
But proceed.
But I do kind of want to have a massive long rant about how there's no science involved in Star Wars.
We should
need to stop lumping things together like that.
We should do a special on that, Andrew. I think you and I would have a great deal of fun doing that.
Because it's just an hour of us screaming that science fiction and fantasy are two distinct categories.
It is not the best sci-fi movie of all time, you idiots!
It's space magic.
It's about a stupid farm boy who develops unnatural feelings for his sister.
And hey, speaking of, none of those things happen in this book.
Right.
Because this is the continuing adventures of my favourite Star Wars character, rogue archaeologist and scoundrel Dr. Chelly Aphra, as she has morally dubious adventures all over the galaxy. So this is written by Kieran Gillen and Cy Spurrier, with art by Amelia Lysow.
Okay.
And this, somewhat unsurprisingly, picks up where the last volume of Dr. Aphra left off. So, I am going to have to spoil the end of that, because I can't really talk about this without it. Basically, what happens at the end of the previous volume is Dr. Aphra's murderous droid best friend, Triple Zero, managed to kind of con her into freeing him from her control. So he is now head of a crime syndicate, indulging all his murdery impulses, and also forcing Aphra to run missions for him, because otherwise he will do bad, nasty, unspeakable things to her.
That happens so rarely in the Star Wars. It is. Someone threatening to do nasty, unspeakable things to people.
It is a real turn up for the books.
It's so unusual. I can't think why no one's done it before.
But yeah, kind of through the plot of the book, quest Aphra and a team of mercenaries hunting after a mysterious artifact. This time it's held deep within an Imperial research station, so they've got to find a way to kind of sneak on board and steal that. And it's basically...
Right.
It's cool. Much like the previous volumes of Dr. Aphra, it's basically just like a big heist movie in space.
Okay. So, here's the big question. So, in my sci-fi corner, I had Alien versus Predator versus Prometheus versus AVP, and the problem with it was that all the stories in there smacked too much of the canon. Okay?
Yep.
Would this book work if it wasn't a Star Wars?
Oh yeah, I think absolutely. Because I think the thing is, it's happening kind of in its own little corner, so you could easily just sort of change some of the designs around. You know, maybe like make the stormtroopers, I don't know, bad shooters. The name is in progress. And you know, maybe
it's just that I'll be honest, I've never Doctor what.
Dr. Aphra, A-P-H-R-A.
See, I know I've watched all the Star Wars films.
And you probably haven't heard of her because she's a completely original comic book character.
All right, that explains that then. Okay, that's good then.
Yeah, I mean, she's hardly Wat Tambor, am I right?
Sorry, who?
Wat Tambor, Mick. Head of the Techno Guild.
Sorry, what?
Oh, I get it. You're more of a Yavelpoof fan, aren't you?
Bless you. What?
The wise and ancient Jedi Master Yavelpoof. Surely you remember him from that one time in The Phantom Menace where he kind of sat around in the background. And so, of course, has an elaborate character history, like story arc.
Oh, The Phantom Menace. Ah, that was a film of mixed emotions for me.
You're right, I'm sorry, I'll go back to the original trilogy.
No. The reason that The Phantom Menace had mixed emotions for me was I spent the first 30 seconds of that movie excitedly jumping up and down thinking, whoa, I've managed to borrow a laptop from work and I've got a screener copy of The Phantom Menace to watch on the train on the way home.
Oh.
And then I spent the rest of the journey going, oh my God, I've got The Phantom Menace to watch on the way home.
See, that's the thing. Phantom Menace isn't trapped on the train with you. You're trapped on the train with Phantom Menace.
Absolutely. Prior to that, my weekly commute. I'd only had the Phantom Menace of the Guard asking me for an increased fare because my season ticket had run out.
And the punchline is, that's better than the prequel films.
Hey!
And Dr. Afer is definitely better than all of them. Because, yeah, it's really fun and refreshing to read, especially when you watch the Star Wars films and they're very clearly kind of, these are the good and noble Jedi, these are the bad, nasty Imperials. And it's cool to kind of see more of the underworld of that universe, where things are a bit more morally murky.
And I think that's the problem for me with Star Wars as a universe, is that it's still doing that good versus evil thing. You've got people like Lando and Han that are a little bit on the edge, but they're essentially still good versus evil.
Yeah, they're morally grey in the sense that sometimes you can pinch their cheek and go, oh, you scoundrel.
Yeah, but essentially they will do what's right. Whereas, you know, the rest of the movie world has gone into that, well, you know, sometimes the universe isn't like that. There are more shades than black and white. There's grey. There's, you know, doing the wrong thing but for the right reasons and vice versa and stuff like that.
Or Dr. Afer's case, often doing the wrong things for the wrong reasons.
Well, indeed. And this is why I asked the question about would it work outside of the Star Wars universe, because I've dabbled with Star Wars comics in the past, and what I found is that they're basically just a comic that needed some branding to sell because they didn't feel it had enough merit on its own.
Yeah, see, I don't know, because part of me prefers comics like that where it's just, we're going to tell our own story, but it's set in this wider universe. Because otherwise you get, well, stuff like the AVPV, AVPV.
PVVPAPV. One thing is, this scores a hell of a lot in Scrabble.
But...
Oh, and have I got to mention the big bugbear?
All
the bits with Predator in is written in Predator.
Well, maybe you shouldn't have slept through the classes then.
What classes?
Oh, that's right. You were educated in the dark times before Predator was a compulsory language module.
Mate, I was educated in the dark times before school was compulsory.
That's madness. But anyway, the point I was making is that you get stuff like that book where it's really closely tied to the canon, and so they can't tell a story because they don't want to rock the boat too much.
Yeah.
Like, it's why. Because the Star Wars series itself that Marvel does is fun and I like it, but it's also, you know, well, obviously Luke Skywalker isn't going to die on this adventure because he's in the movies.
And I think with AVPV, PVP, AVP, you've kind of got the reverse of that, in the, because none of these are characters that appear in the movie. They reference characters that appear in the movies, but because none of these are the characters in the movies, you kind of know that they probably are going to die.
Yeah, but also they're not going to defeat the Predator race forever, are they?
No, they're not going to wipe them from the face of the earth.
Yeah, that was...
Right, well...
So yeah, Dr. Afer continues to be very good, and I love it.
Excellent. Glad someone came out of Sci-Fi Corner happy, even though you shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Filthy interloper.
So, I think we're going a bit crimey now, aren't we?
Yep, we are. It's time to hit the mean streets, see what we can rough up and shake down. And
like the couple of dicks we are.
I mean, that's pretty much the fairest way to put it.
Yeah. So, I've got vinegar teeth. That's the title of the comic. I don't mean it's a condition I suffer from.
It's not very specific denial.
I'm not discounting the fact that I suffer from conditions. I'm just stating that when I say I've got vinegar teeth, I mean that's the name of the publication in my hand.
Oh, let it slide.
So this is a collection of issues 1-4. Again, it's Dark Horse. I'm on a bit of a Dark Horse vibe this week, aren't I?
It's almost like they're one of the two major publishers that we get books from.
I wonder who the other one is. Basically, this follows the adventures of Artie Buckle, who's a detective in the preposterously named Brick City.
Well, say what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I was drawn to this because the art style is very similar to a similar volume that I covered a few months back, way back in season one, in fact, called The Black Sinister. And it's not quite as enjoyable. But if you like your detective stories to have a kind of surreal twist, and you don't really mind people taking liberties with the format and the genre, it's actually quite entertaining. Like I say, not as good as The Black Sinister, but not a million miles away. So, Artie Buckle, as you've probably gathered, is not the eponymous hero. He goes out, he's been working tirelessly to try and bring down this ring of organised crime in Brick City. And just as he's about to take down the lieutenants and the ringleaders of the criminal underworld in Brick City, the head villain gets eaten by an alien.
These damn criminals, they've all got some trick up their sleeve to get away.
However, the mayor then hails said alien, who gets named Vinegar Teeth by Artie because his breath smells, because he's an alien. He's also shaped a bit like a scrotum. If you can imagine a walking scrotum with a face that's a sort of cross between Deadpool and Venom.
I mean, I can, but I'm not an arse.
With a facial adornment that you're not quite sure whether it's tentacles or intestines. That's kind of what Vinegar Teeth looks like. But Vinegar Teeth harbours a dark secret, which Artie Buckle intends to use to overcome his popularity, because suddenly Artie is not the top cop anymore. Suddenly Artie is playing second fiddle to the new hero, and he's not happy about it. He suddenly becomes the laughingstock at the station. But whilst crime rates are falling, so is the number of villains actually in custody. And there's a correlation between Vinegar Teeth's arrival and this mismatch of figures. And then it gets revealed why this is the case. I won't spoil.
Although I have my suspicions.
I think that the problem with this is it takes too long to get to the point. That's its big downfall. Once it gets there, it's a climax you won't forget. Put it that way. And Brick City, I'm sure, will never be the same again afterwards. But yeah, it's reasonably entertaining. It wasn't a chore to read. And it's a collection of four issues, so it's not a humongous book to read. It's by Troy Nixie, Damon Gentry, Guy Major and Michelle Madsen. Troy Nixie does the art, which is why it looks so similar to Black Sinister. And it was written by Damon Gentry and Troy Nixie. So, I don't know, I don't know which bits were written by whom, but maybe Troy ought to stick to the arty stuff. Possibly. I don't know. It may all be Damon Gentry's fault. But interestingly, there is one where Troy Nixie does the art and Neil Gaiman is the writer, called Only the End of the World Again. I would read the hell out of that.
Yeah, that's a heck of a creative team.
Yeah. So there we go. So that's my crime done.
Okay. Time for my turn in the crime seat. I've been reading Brooklyn Blood by Paul Levitz and Tim Hamilton. So this is another Dark Horse series. I'm not sure how many issues long you could call it, because this is a feature that originally kind of occurred as a backup in Dark Horse Presents. So each installment was only a few pages long, and that was 16 issues. So I'm not sure, maybe sort of six normal-sized issues.
Okay.
And this follows two detectives, O'Connor and Hassan, as they begin investigating a series of mysterious occult murders in the borough of Brooklyn. And as they do, uncover one of those dark, horrible secrets of the Lovecraftian variety.
Ah.
And yeah, it's a fun mix of... It's basically Lethal Weapon meets the Elder Gods.
Which was, of course, the unused plot for Lethal Weapon 4.
Yeah, if only they had used it. Instead of Jet Li can take your gun. I mean, just shoot him before he grabs it, guys.
That's not giving him a sporting chance, though, is it?
I mean, but I feel like maybe you shouldn't just give the criminal another sporting chance. Maybe.
You're no fun.
Look, as the chief of police of this station... It's my job to get these crime stats up. And maybe if we stop giving the criminals a head start.
Listen, I don't need this crap. I'm only two years away from retirement.
Fine, Mick, I'll allow it. But only because Your constant breaking of the rules gets results, damn it.
I know, and not only that, but also you've tried confining me to a desk job and it just doesn't work, damn it.
No, you misfile the paperwork in some kind of humorous and amusing manner that shows you're too much of a badass be behind a desk.
That's right. And don't you forget it, with respect.
Yeah, it's funny we say that, because ultimately I do quite like this series. It's a fun kind of mix of pulpy detectives and sort of weird horror. Especially Tim Hamilton's art really brings that out. Everything's kind of done in these sickly sort of blue and yellow colours. So, everything always feels not quite right and a bit unsettling, which I like. But also, Hassan and O'Connor themselves are very kind of 80s cop cliches. Like, O'Connor, he's been in the war and he's still got PTSD and he's kind of on the edge, which means he drinks and he smokes too much. And Hassan, you know, she's the by-the-book cop who's trying to keep her partner from spiralling off the edge. Except when it comes time for the crime to get personal, then she decides that, no, it's no time for rules. We've got to go off the book to catch this SOB.
Does she use rude words?
Both of them do. Filthy mouths, Mick. Talk like sailors.
Are they potty mouths?
Ah.
There's just no need for that in a modern crime-fighting environment.
No, I think they need to take their entire salary and just put it in the swear jar.
Yeah. You see, you never find Batman doing things like that, do you?
He doesn't, unless he's being written by Frank Miller.
That's right.
I think that falls into extenuating circumstances.
I think it does. I think that falls under PTSD, to be fair.
I think so does reading it. But yeah, it's fun. It's like an enjoyable read, if a little cliched, and also kind of clunky in places, which I think it is because of the way it's been kind of broken up and serialized. It means every few pages, someone's got to like end a conversation by saying something dramatically.
Yeah, and I think I've experienced that recently with some comics I've read, where I think depending on when something's published, you can spot kind of what era it was written in. So I've been reading some of the earlier 2000 AD strips in a collected form, but clearly there was never an original intent for them ever to be published that way. So they read very episodically, but more modern titles I find are written, and maybe not in the case of a backup strip in something like an anthology series, but certainly something like Vinegar Teeth, you get the feeling that although it was originally published as four separate issues, the plan was always to, at some point, publish it as a single story.
Oh, yeah,
story.
Well, it's the idea of writing for the trade, which I think Dr. Rayford does that as well, where it's an ongoing series, but it's clearly been planned out so that the six issues in this collection tell kind of a complete story.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah cool. To reiterate, but ultimately, it's a good read. That's a weird, creepy monster stuff.
And if you're going to have a creepy monster, it might as well be a weird one.
Yeah. It's a bit of a disappointment if it isn't.
You see, that's the kind of life advice you don't get on other podcasts. Make sure your creepy monsters are weird ones. We should have that as like a sign-off.
See, that's...
And may all your creepy monsters be weird
and
ones.
That's why people keep listening to the show for moral advice.
Always make sure your nemesis is evil.
I mean, and if they're not, they probably are after you punch them in the face.
Be careful of men offering you places on weapons programmes.
I mean, don't trust robots whose explicit purpose is to torture and murder people.
Hmm. And if a fella in spandex claims to have a mother with the same name as you, just walk, as yours, walk away. Walk away.
Which I think leads on to the bigger point of, never listen to Jesse Eisenberg.
Especially that last album, that was terrible.
Does Jesse Eisenberg make music?
Sorry, Jesse J. I get the few. It's because they're filed on my bookshelf alphabetically, sort of adjacent. So, sorry.
Well, and on that horrifying realization that Mick organises things alphabetically by first name, I think that's the end of the show.
Yeah, that would explain why I've got so many albums under T.
That's, I get a cold shiver just thinking about that. Okay, that's it. We're done. It's the end of the show. I've been Andrew.
I've been Mick.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.
Hi, it's Dave from Geek Corner. If you really love cosplay and you like to get dressed up as your favourite characters from TV and movies, whatever it is that you like to dress as, get yourselves down to Geek Corner in Stockton-on-Tees in the Regency West Mall. We actually make cosplay props and costuming props. They're generally made from foam and stuff, so they're perfectly safe to have out in the public. So come along, say hi,